What they want to be able to see is easy access to learning, really clear pathways. How can I progress? What do I need to do to get to the next level? And they really love clear, open, honest feedback.
Hey everyone, Gordon here. Thanks for joining us on the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you're with us for the first time, a very warm welcome. If you're a regular listener, well, thanks so much for coming back. You found your way to the How to Get Stuff Done series. In this series, through our guests' experiences and sharing of their insights, we learn how they get stuff done, how they have got to where they are today by sharing some of their techniques and strategies for doing so. I hope you find it both interesting and insightful, but also practical at the same time. Now let's see who our guest is today. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm joined today by Kim England. Kim is the Vice President of Digital Employee Experience and Community Engagement at Pearson. And she has a career spanning 16 years, a track record delivering complex digital employee experiences, employee communities, and also global intranets. She is a naturally curious people person, and I had the pleasure of meeting her at an HR conference about a month ago here in London. She's also passionate about volunteering, including working with refugees and managing social media for her child's school PTA, as well as a voice board member for Young Lives versus Cancer. So I think she has a lot to share with us on the Get Stuff Done podcast. She immediately was interested to become a guest when I mentioned it to her. So Kim, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And just before we came on, you mentioned that you're in the festive mood already because of your appointment later today.
Yes, that's right. So I've got my festive earrings on because I have the Christmas fair, and as I'm a member of the PTA, I will be rushing off to get some stuff done for the kids' school.
Excellent. Excellent. So, I mean, this episode will be broadcast in the new year. So we're talking to people who have got through the Christmas rush, got through to the new year, and now in 2025, they're all about their New Year's resolutions and what new stuff they're going to get done in the new year. But here we are talking about what we want to get done and how we do that. So straight in with the first question, which I ask all of my guests right off the bat, Kim, which is, how do you go about getting stuff done?
That's such a great question, because sometimes I ask myself the same question. So I think one of the challenges that I have being a working mum, I have a busy schedule because I, as I said, do volunteering. Well, as you said, I do volunteering. So there's a lot of lists. There's a lot of calendar management. So if I don't have my calendar, I'm completely lost. And actually, same what here. I do is completely overlay the school schedule, the children's schedule, my husband's schedule, my schedule, and everything into one calendar. So, you know, I think it really takes a lot of organisation. And then when it comes to work, it's really no different. So in employee communications, you know, one of the things that you're doing all the time is managing lots and lots of stakeholders, lots and lots of projects that overlap. So I think, you know, then the organisation skills come back into their own. And really it's just about carving out time to get things done. And I like to really focus on, you know, when and where and how I'll get those things done as I sort of look through the day. And then you get the curveballs, right? So again, anyone who's listening that's in employee communications will know that the best laid plans are sometimes sent off the rails. And so therefore, one of the things that I think I pride myself in is I'm very flexible.
Now, you mentioned communication, of course, absolutely fundamental from start to finish in any project or anything that we are getting done. You are literally, you know, your role is all about that. So tell us a little bit about what exactly your role entails.
Yeah, so it's an interesting role because I've been at Pearson for 16 years, and in that time it's sort of really evolved. So I sort of started as an internal communications manager, and then it kind of evolved into more of a kind of community role. So Pearson was one of the first early adopters of the Enterprise Social Network. So about the same time that, you know, we were all kind of having our worlds revolutionised by Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn was taking off, Pearson was really looking at how we could sort of harness that social sort of community, if you like, for our intranet. And so over 10 years, I built a really sort of big community. It was called Neo. It was using Jive software. And one of the things that I really loved about my job was I felt like I was the glue across the organisation. So I almost had this like sort of 20,000 foot view of everything that was going on and how everybody sort of connected. But I think, you know, as we sort of moved into COVID, there were other challenges that were happening around the world politically, and just how people were also feeling about social media. So, you know, Twitter went from being something that we were all excited about what the possibilities were to, you know, kind of being a bit of a dumpster fire. I'm just coughing there. And we starting to see people leave Twitter, right? Like people are moving to other platforms. We were finding that our social intranet was having some of those similar bumps. So there was 1.3 million pieces of content. People were finding it really difficult to navigate. And so we took a really radical step to basically move away from an enterprise social network and back to a more traditional intranet. So for the last 3 years, I've been implementing Unily. Now, Unily is not a typical traditional intranet by any stretch. It has lots and lots of really great functionality around social, but we decided to switch it off for now because what we wanted to do was just really focus our employees on what really mattered at that point in time. We were coming out of COVID, we had a new CEO, we were really trying to change the direction of the organisation. And so my focus has really been on landing that platform, really understanding what that platform can do. But then also now as we sort of move into our fourth year, what next? And what we've realised is we're really missing social. So my sort of current task is to really think about how do we reintroduce that, but in a way that's meaningful, in a way that isn't going to be distracting. Because in a post-COVID world, I think what we're hearing from our employees all the time is that they're overwhelmed. I feel overwhelmed when I, you know, turn on the news or look through my own social feeds. And so we want to make sure that when you come to work, it's not another place that you're, you know, incredibly overwhelmed and you've got to, you know, sort of trawl through all these discussions and threads and different bits of technology to find what you really need. I'm in a new uncharted territory because we're kind of bringing the old with the new, but really just trying to simplify and focus our employees so that they can have the best possible employee experience. So that's kind of what I'm doing at the minute.
Okay. I'm curious whether the team and the mandate of what you have to do in your role is something that the organization has kind of like fully backed from the start. Was it something like strategically identified as needed, or was it something that came out of kind of employee feedback, or, you know, experts like yourself really trying to promote it and bring it to the fore? I'm wondering because, of course, there's a lot of organisations who don't dedicate as many resources to this.
Yeah, so I would say it's really complicated because I think, you know, Pearson was in quite a unique position because we had the social intranet, Neo, and it had no other competing intranets. So when I talk to, you know, peers in other companies, they might have had an enterprise social network, but they might have also had a traditional intranet at the same time. We just had the one. Now, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Was that the right thing to do? You know, was it really designed to be the intranet? You know, an intranet is a really important channel within an organisation because it's where people go to get the information that they need. But also at the same time, employee expectations are changing, right? So I don't just want to go to an intranet and get information. I want to have that two-way dialogue. And so I think it was really an evolution, and I think some happy accidents in terms of, you know, how it was successful, and some frustrations, right, when, you know, we realised that perhaps where we were wasn't quite where we wanted to be. And so there was some employee feedback, and, you know, I'll just give you one anecdote. You know, from one side of the fence, you could say, oh, we had this, you know, flourishing community and it was great for our employees. But actually, if you were a new employee, it might have felt that it was not necessarily clear where you started, right? If you're not following lots of people, the community might not feel the same as if you've been at the company like, you know, I had for a long, long period of time. Or if you're the CEO coming in and you're trying to get your message out there, How easy is it to do that when you don't have lots of followers, but somebody who's perhaps been there for 10 years that's not necessarily communicating accurate information has way more followers, right? So it was sort of, you know, a series of different things, I think, that came together that helped us make the decision that right now we need to focus. I think where we are now is we are thinking about, you know, how do we really drive Pearson forward as an organisation into new uncharted territory too. Pearson's a 108-year-old company. It's had to constantly evolve. And so what we're really in this kind of space now where it's like, well, okay, if we're evolving as a company, our experiences for our employees need to evolve. And then, you know, if you also layer on the fact that all of our employees, because I think we all do as humans, expect, you know, the search to work like Google, they expect, you know, the different transactions that might happen to work like Amazon, and, you know, tech companies that are building all these wonderful tools, they don't work like that. I think when you and I met, I was talking on a panel and I said we need to hold some of these technology companies to account because they are not building good tech for us. They build tech that has lots of promises. It will integrate with Office 365. It will solve all your problems. And generally they don't. Technology doesn't solve problems. Technology enables us to look at problems differently and it can help, but it doesn't always solve all of the problems. So that's the other sort of side of kind of why I think my role is important, because we have to get employee experience right from day one. Because if we don't, you know, our employees will vote with their feet and, you know, they will consider where they might go and get a better employee experience.
Yes, and I think technology is enabling that visibility to be, you know, at a peak level more than ever before. And there's many factors around mobility, but there's no doubt that on the one hand, the ease to switch companies is increasing, especially with the change of flexible working and working from home, dramatically increasing that geographic area from where people can work from. So you've talked there a little bit about the technology side. So how, and even digital employee experience is in your title. So in terms of the communication that you're fostering is primarily online. And so I'm wondering about what's happening when it's not online and whether that is kind of, you know, where that fits in terms of its importance in what you do.
Yeah, so Pearson's a global company. And I think, you know, before COVID, we were a relatively remote organisation. And one of the things I think that's quite unique about Pearson is even before we were all kind of working from home in lockdown, we're a very video company. So, you know, I would never turn up to a meeting and treat it like a conference call. You know, we were early adopters. We were in G Suite for a while. We're on Office 365 now, but I think that move to G Suite really opened up people having kind of more video conferences. So, you know, we actually really adopted that. So every meeting that I'm in all day long feels like, you know, I'm literally there with people. People don't tend to have their cameras off. It feels like a proper meeting. And so because of that, the nature of the way that we are working, you know, everyone in my team, none of us are co-located, right? None of us, even if we all turned up at the office, would be in the same office because we're in, you know, US, Germany, right. You know, we've got folk across multiple time zones in the US as well. I could be on calls with people in, you know, Hong Kong, Dubai, etc. So I think Pearson really does kind of focus on being a remote first organisation, but I do think there's room for improvement. And I do think that there is a real need for that human connection for people to come together. So, you know, we do have office spaces where people come in. We do have town halls. We do, you know, have people come together for team meetings and so on. But it's more focused on, you know, those groups coming together to get, you know, their work done, as opposed to just coming in and sitting side by side for the sake of sitting side by side. Because there's nothing worse. And this is the bit that really frustrates me about the whole like remote, hybrid, you know, all in office argument. There's nothing worse than going into an office and spending the entire day on Teams talking to people who are not in the office, right? Like,
yeah, for
sure. It's just madness.
For sure.
Like, if you're a small boutique agency in London, I get it. You want your people in, you know, you're doing, there's probably people doing multiple roles. If you're a startup, right, and, you know, someone's doing a bit of this role and a bit of that, get it. I completely get it.
Yeah.
But when you work in a company that's like Pearson, that's, you know, 16,500 people, and you drag yourself into London and you spend, you know, all day talking to people in the, I would much rather do that from the comfort of my home.
Yeah.
Because it also gives me the flexibility to get stuff done around a schedule that works for me. So, you know, as an example, I have two children. You know, I really like to be able to see them in the mornings, get them off to school. You know, they come back around sort of 5-6 o'clock. I can come offline, you know, free myself up. But then also I'm available to go back online if needs be, because I've got colleagues that are in the US right the way across to the West Coast. It suits me perfectly. After this podcast, I'm off to school. I'll be out for a couple of hours to do the Christmas fair, but then I can come back and join some meetings. So I think, you know, for getting stuff done, it should be measured really on your output, the quality of your work, and that flexibility, you know, from an employee experience perspective, is the thing I value most at Pearson. They give me flexibility, so I give the flexibility back in return.
Yeah, I'll never forget early days of COVID. I went to the supermarket. This is over in Korea, and it was mandated out of office. Like, there wasn't a lockdown, but we weren't allowed to be in office. And there was somebody walking around the supermarket aisle with his laptop open, full size laptop, not tablet.
Oh my goodness!
Full size laptop, and he was. I think he was keeping his activity on, because of course there was still tremendous amounts of monitoring about activity, and mouse movement is, you know, even being tracked, because there was a lot of management thinking that working from home means not working.
That's so wild to me, because I think since with the flexible working arrangement, I used to commute into London 3 days a week and then, you know, sort of reduce that a little bit. So I've been working from home for quite a long time. I think I work harder working from home. I mean, I actually would say one of the challenges is that you can fall into the trap that you're always on.
Yeah, right.
Like, it almost for feels sure. a little bit like when I first got a BlackBerry. And I remember the thing about a BlackBerry was it used to have that green and red light. So, you know, it would be in your handbag or it would be on a table and it would flash red when you'd got an email. And it started to create that sense of like needing to check it, like, oh, what's come in? And I feel like, you know, the newspapers and the media, it's absolutely full of the headlines of, you know, working from home, people are really lazy. But what about all the working from home people who, you know, there is almost no distinction, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm lucky I have an office, I can shut the door. But, you know, I think there's an argument to say that for some people, and I would say the majority, certainly in the environment I work in, work tremendously hard from home.
You mentioned about all the different locations that Pearson's located around the world, and also about new starters coming in and maybe having a different feeling to those who've been at the organisation for longer. What do you see? Are there any examples you have of extremely different expectations when it comes to new employees, either junior new hires or experienced hires, or just around the world, in terms of like just vastly different expectations of what the organization will give to me, what's expected of me? I hope you're enjoying this episode. I just wanted to remind you to click subscribe if you haven't done so yet. By subscribing and following the podcast, you'll get each and every episode automatically pop up on your playlist every week, so you won't miss any. Thank you so much for being with us. Now let's get back to our guest. Have you had any instances of that?
Yeah, so I ran a panel a couple of weeks ago with some Gen Z colleagues, and one of the things that the panel was focused on was the myth busting. And I think it's really interesting, you know, there's lots of debates about Gen Z, but what I found fascinating when I was sort of talking to them is, you know, they quite often, another argument for remote working, not working and needing people in the office was because, you know, junior members of the team might come in and need to be almost like shadowing people, or, you know, how do they get a mentor? How do they, you know, really see, you know, how the job gets done? And they didn't feel like that at all. What they really wanted was the opportunity for mentorship, right? They wanted to make sure that there was opportunities for them to be seen. But I think if organisations are really committed to career progression, to building people's careers and creating career pathways, then, you know, in some ways, just shadowing and hoping the boss might be in at 8 o'clock when everyone else has gone out and you kind of catch them for a chat, that's not how they're expecting to move and climb and grow their careers in an organisation. That's how it worked back in the day, but that's not how they're coming into the world of work and thinking that that's how they will progress. What they want to be able to see is easy access to learning, really clear pathways. How can I progress? What do I need to do to get to the next level? And they really love clear, open, honest feedback. So, you know, again, when you see the headlines about, you know, we're snowflakes or Gen Z snowflakes, they're not. They actually really, really value being listened to, but also being given, you know, really straight up feedback that's going to help them progress.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the biggest difference that I've really seen, is that we really need to understand that and nurture that, because for me, that's an amazing way to get things done. Like, tell me, you know, what's expected of me. Tell me if I met those expectations. Give me some room for improvement. And, you know, we can have that continuous improvement, you know, as we move from, you know, project, task, you know, role to role. So, I thought it was just fascinating. And, you know, love talking to Gen Z folk. I have a few that I mentor and I get so much out of it, because I feel like I get as much out of it as I hope they're getting out of it from me.
that is a thing, right? Reverse mentoring. Exactly. That is a thing. No, two-way thing. I think what you said there is absolutely on point. I was at an event last week and somebody said, because everyone's got to be in when they're early in their career, because learning by osmosis, right? And I was like, learning by osmosis. And I literally thought back to examples of when I was starting out my career. And it's like you said, you're put next to this person, this senior or experienced person. They, in a lot of cases, don't want you to be there because they figure that you're getting in the way. So there's not a proactive and positive learning plan set up in most cases. And whereas actually now there's such fantastic, like you said, access to learning, fantastic virtual and online learning, where actually that the amount of information that they can access and clearly decide what it is that they need and don't need, it's much quicker and much more effective. Now, of course, there are exceptions. There's definitely certain jobs where...
Oh, I mean, I want a doctor following a surgeon round. Right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. You know, and you know, how to go through a certain role or, you know, a certain process, then of course, there's no doubt about it. But broadly
speaking,
I think
the big shift, though, and I've been saying this for a long time, is the shift is from knowledge is power to collaboration is power. Collaboration and being able to be collaborative is so much more important than, you know, and that's where the kind of hierarchies came in. Gen Z don't see hierarchy either, right? Like, they see it as like, here's the project, here's what we've got to get done, let's work together to collaborate and get it done. And, you know, that is very difficult for some of the people who that was not their experience of, you know, their career progression. So it's an interesting time.
It is. And then it's even having ripples down into education. Does a four-year university degree of formal education give that person the best start to enter the world of work? That's also a big
being in an education company, we talk about that all the time. But from a personal perspective, you know, one of the people that I mentor has just done an apprenticeship degree. Okay. And I would say that they are much better placed for the world of work than perhaps somebody who did the same degree but went and did it for 4 years at university. And the goalposts have changed, right? Because that person was doing it during COVID. So by doing an apprenticeship degree, they were doing their degree side by side, actually getting, you know, real life work experience in a strange world, right? So they were doing all their meetings in Teams because we weren't going into the office, worked on campaigns, was able to really hone their skills. But at the same time, you know, they've then come out from the degree, they've got a first class degree, so they've done fantastically well and gone straight into a job and have, you know, already has a resume that's full of great experiences and examples of how they can apply that learning. So I don't think I would go back and do a university degree. I did a communications degree, which is madness because I didn't learn anything on that degree that's actually relevant to what I actually do in communication. So it was wild. Great fun to be at university, and you know, is it university of life as much as it is about university of education? The world is definitely changing, and I would much rather do more, you know, micro credentialing and learning on the job, right?
Yeah. And so you mentioned even your entire career within communication, but even you studied at university, communication studies. What is it that inclined you to go into that field? What was it that kind of got your interest initially and now made you stay in the field for many years?
I wish it was as simple as to say there was a plan, but I don't think I had a plan.
I thought people in communication are always making... plans, isn't that?
We make other people do plans. We don't always do plans, right?
Got it.
I mean, it was a series of happy accidents. I picked the degree because in the second year I was going to be able to go to Australia. I didn't go to Australia because I got a boyfriend, so that changed. Came out of university and went traveling, got my first job at BP. It was a team assistant, you know, so I was like, you know, straight out of university, but have this communications degree. Didn't really feel like I was qualified for anything. But actually, I would say probably my plan was just to say yes. So while I was at BP, I got an opportunity to work on a project, and I said yes. I got to get involved in communications, working alongside somebody. And then that's actually when I really got sort of more into kind of what really employee communications was all about. I did black belt communication. And then when I left BP, I took the role at Pearson and kind of, I would say I really learned on the job. The other way I really learn is a lot of the conferences that I've been to, because, you know, you hear from other people what they're up to, connect with them on LinkedIn, follow them, and then, you know, really just learn from the network. My network is amazing. It's full of just some of the best people in employee communications, internal communications, and they're so generous with their time and sharing. So, you know, I've kind of evolved, I think, through that. The Jive community was particularly generous. So the community members that were using that technology and in their companies was fantastic. Everybody would constantly share best practice, what they were doing, what was working, what wasn't working. So yeah, I think it's a kind of accidental career, but I think what keeps me in it is I just love it. I just love the fact that all day long I get to work with people and problem solve and really think about how we can constantly like raise the bar on what we're doing. And do we get it right all the time? No. But the intent is there, and a lot of the time we do get it right.
It's interesting you said about how amazing some of the networks are. Now, I strongly believe that a network is only as good as what you put in. So I take from that that you must also be very proactive with your network. For someone who maybe feels that they're not getting anywhere because of a lack of network or because they don't feel they have a very good network, what would be some of the things that you might suggest for them to get to a point where they can say, my network is great, like you just did?
I would start with LinkedIn. I mean, LinkedIn is a great source. There's some fantastic people that I follow. Joanne Parsons is, you know, my number one. She is an incredibly generous internal communications professional. What I love about her is that she shares so much really digestible content, like quick videos, and just start engaging in the comments. I think that's the thing that I find really interesting, is that there's a lot of conversation happening. She's not just sharing the content, it's the actual richness of what's coming back from other people who are also showing her content. She has a newsletter, and I think, you know, there's people like that. Jenny Field is another one. They post such great content, and you can start to build that network by engaging with it, right? And then engaging with the other people that are involved. And then there's also lots of free webinars. So, you know, if you go to Unily as an example, yes, it might be about their platform, but quite often some of the webinars that they're talking about are, you know, the topic of employee engagement, mm-hmm. the topic of, you know, digital employee experience. It's not mm-hmm. just about their platform. And all of the platforms that are in this space have free webinars that you can go to. Okay. So that's kind of where I would start, because then you'll start to get a sense of what's the area that I'm most interested in, and then who are those people that are the experts in that particular field, and then take it from there. So I don't get to go to as many events in person as I used to. And so LinkedIn has become like my kind of backup for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the other thing is, don't forget to say thank you. So when someone is generous, you know, it doesn't take a lot to just say, you know, thank you, really appreciate it. Or if you read someone's post and you don't really have anything to contribute, you know, just letting them know that you really appreciated it and it was helpful to you is sometimes just enough.
I think
kindness always just helps, right? Like if I've written a post and someone just says, this was great, thank you. Like, okay, it was worth it.
For sure. And I think what you've highlighted there is a key point that people might be struggling with, is they think to build a good network, I've got to be a content creator. I don't have anything to say. I'm not an expert. But from what you're saying, no, absolutely not. You just have to engage. And I think joining webinars is actually a very good one, because in that webinar, you see who are the speakers, who are the people engaging, and then you can be in that conversation with them. You're learning something yourself. You then have an opportunity to connect with them because you have something in common. And I think that, that's the starting point, right?
It's a vulnerable place to be. Like, you know, I think about another person, Frank Dias. He is wonderful. If you are even remotely curious about AI, he is the person to go and follow, because he's been in-house for a long time. He's now set out on his own. He's really passionate about AI, especially around what it means for internal communications, and he's putting some fantastic content out there. And so, you know, there's so many avenues. So if once you start following a couple of those people, or as you say, going to webinars and really finding out who those experts are, then it's like a snowball, right? Like it will become an avalanche.
And so you mentioned about how you mentor people, and you know, obviously you've now been in a leadership role for a while. How would you define your own personal leadership style?
Well, interestingly, I've just had a leadership assessment. So apparently I lead with purpose and strategy, which I wouldn't disagree with, actually, because I think, you know, why have I worked at Pearson for so long? Because it's a purpose-driven organisation, and that's really important to me. So I would say that purpose and believing in what I do is truly important to me. So, you know, I think I am quite infectious in terms of that excitement that I have. And I think one of the things I'm really good at, my number one Clifton strength is woo. So as a leader, I can be relied on to bring people along on the journey. But I also think what I'm quite good at in terms of a leadership style is really being able to paint the picture of where we're going. And then what I do is work out who in the team is going to help us get there. So let's play to their strengths. And so I'm a very collaborative leader. My team have adapted sort of an agile working model. It's not quite what I would say purest agile. Mm-hmm. But I think what we really like about some of the agile methodology is just the fact that we can really focus on getting stuff done. So what are we going to get done this week? What are we going to get done, you know, by the end of the month? And really just working to sprints that suit, you know, what we've got to focus on sort of, you know, across our workload. But also really liking the fact that it's adaptable. And I think one of the things that we've all really enjoyed is the retrospective. So, you know, it's very easy to get completely lost in, you know, we've done one thing, now move on to the next thing. And that happens a lot in employee communications. Like, we tell everyone how to do change and communicate really well. But do we actually do that for ourselves? And so that's a... Right. That's a muscle that we're working on, right? Like, that's not something we've got quite right just yet. But when we have done the retrospectives, it's really helped us to think about, well, why didn't that quite work? What can we adapt and change for the future? So I really appreciate that way of working. I think it's got us out of a few tight spots when we've had some challenging projects to deliver. But it also, I think, levels the playing field. So, you know, thinking back to Gen Z's not being as focused on hierarchy, that's the other great thing about Agile. You don't have to have a hierarchy. It's just about being really clear about what needs to be done, how we're going to get it done, and who's doing it in service of what the customer actually needs, not just doing it for the sake of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that hierarchy is an interesting one. I was at an HR conference where there was an example of a program of gigs that they have created. So they allow people, whatever level they are, to go and do gigs, short-term assignments within the company. What they found is that there had a lot of people who were reaching a certain point in their career. They have a certain amount of experience, not sure how or which way to go next. And they undertake this gig, and it allows a certain amount of kind of retraining within their skill set to know, or at least kind of test the water, that they could go into this area. It's not that gig facilitates that move, it's not about that, but it allows them to be aware for themselves of where they might go next. And so they were seeing it having a really great effect on retention, because rather than people thinking, I don't know where to go next, I don't see any paths, try something that's maybe a little bit, yeah, it's certainly lateral, but it might just be totally outside of your function, not your kind of, pre-existing skill set. But turns out, actually, there's so many transferable skills, you're already well embedded in the organization, and you can do that really well. And yeah, so they're having some great.
I love that. We've tried that out at Pearson in different parts of our organization, and we're looking at kind of different ways that we can sort of reignite that. Because for me, it's also, sometimes it's not about you want to move into that role. Sometimes it's about, I need to understand how the people who I have to collaborate with, what some of their processes are, to understand why they maybe make the decisions that they make, or why they behave in a certain way in terms of, how they react to the change that we're perhaps implementing or thinking about doing. So you're sort of almost seeing it from the other side, and you can go back to your role and be like, hey, like, now I understand a little bit more. I love that. We talk about learning at Pearson for our employees, we talk about sort of the breakdown of, how much of it is formal learning, how much of it is social learning. And the biggest chunk is the learning you do in the flow of your work, right? It's like, I think it's 70%, because that's when, you're not just learning by attending the course, you're learning by doing. I love the idea of gigs. I think some people are really uncomfortable with it. But for me, the best companies should be moving their talent around and spreading that talent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the person who joins as, 25-year-old, straight out of uni, with desire to be in one area, is not necessarily looking for the same thing 5 years later, when they're at a totally different life stage. Really, the best way to try to retain those people and continue to get even more value from them over time, as opposed to losing that talent, is by that flexibility. And I think, of course, we can say that the largest organizations are blessed with having that extra capacity. When we talk about global mobility, being able to hold somebody in place for a number of months or a certain period of time to facilitate that next move is a luxury that small organizations, leaner organizations don't have, which is unfortunate. So it's always a balance, but then they're not dealing with as many people. So in that sense, it's, if you have more people, you have more complexity.
Yeah, but I don't think it has to be that complicated. One of the things I remember from working at BP, it was a long time ago, 17 years almost. So, whether they have this now, I have no idea. But they had this notion of a personal development plan, which was just a one PowerPoint slide. It had your little tiny picture of yourself on it. It had kind of what your current role was. And then it had like your 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan. And I guess at the time, lots of people were sort of lifers at BP. People were there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And their view was that you would probably be enrolled for 2 years, not much longer than that. And that was just a given, right? So everybody would be, going around with their PDPs, having conversations with managers and leaders, and maybe a mentor, maybe somebody that's going to help them get to that 5 year plan, maybe somebody that's just going to focus on their 1 year. And, if you'd have a career conversation, you'd send that ahead of time. And it was really focused on, okay, how do I get to that next box on that deck? What's the development that I need to do? What's the training? Is it that, if I really want to be a senior leader and I'm a marketeer, they might say you need to go and do like a stint in finance, right? You need to go and do a 2 year role in finance, or, you're great, but the one area that you're not so great on is analytics. We're going to go and put you in, a business analyst role for a cycle, maybe just 6 months, maybe a year, going back to that kind of gig piece. But it was about the individual, right? So it was about having that initial conversation with your manager that said, where do you want to be? And then they had gave you the building blocks to get there. And I just thought it was, you know, fascinating because it was how they were really moving talent around, and very few people left.
Definitely. Out of time, I want to really thoroughly thank you for being a guest today. I almost feel we could keep going. I don't think
we
haven't run out of steam, but we've just run out of time, unfortunately. So, and we covered a lot, which I think will be of immense value to everyone. So, yeah, thank you for sharing your insights today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to everybody listening, wherever you may be. Another fantastic episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you have not subscribed to us yet, I don't know what you're doing. We're on our 40-something episode already. So please do subscribe, whatever platform you are on. And if you are even so kind as to give us a review, that will help us to reach even more people. Once again, thanks very much. And remember, let's get stuff done. And that's another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd like to get involved and you have someone who you think would be a good guest for the podcast, please drop me a message and I'll be happy to get in touch. Alternatively, if you would like to share this episode on your social media, that would also be extremely appreciated by us. Thank you so much once again. Remember, let's get stuff done.